Thank you very much, Colleen. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. Welcome to the GNSO Council meeting on the 24th of August, 2017. Would you please acknowledge your name when I call it out now? Thank you. James Bradle.
Here.
Donna Austin.
Here.
Ruben Stuhl.
Ruben says noted in chat that he is here. Yeah, he noted in chat that he is attending. He's not on the bridge yet, but he's dialing in.
Thank you very much for that, Keith. Ruben also has Keith as proxy should he not be able to attend the whole meeting. So, Keith Dravik?
Here.
Thank you. Darcy Shotwell. Michaela Nalan.
Here.
Valerie Tan.
Hi, here.
Thank you. Phil Corwin.
Present, and I'm holding Susan Calagucci's proxy.
Thank you very much for that, Phil. That's correct. Susan has sent her apologies in, and Phil Corwin is her proxy. Paul McGrady.
Here.
Wolf Ollis-Mervin.
Here.
Rafik Damak. Rafik, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you very much. Stephanie Pram.
Here.
Stefania Milan.
Here.
Heather Forrest.
Here, Natalie. Thank you.
Tony Harris.
Here.
Tatiana Tropina.
Here.
Thank you. Tatiana is a temporary alternate for MCSC Councillor Ed Mullins. Welcome, Tatiana. Martin Silva-Valente.
Here.
Melilla Maciel.
Present. Thank you.
Thank you. Yotar Singhias.
Here.
Sarah Langdonor.
Present.
Carlos Raul Gutierrez.
Here. Thank you.
Thank you. And Carlos has notified us that he will be joining the first part of the council meeting only. Ben Fuller.
Here.
Erica Mann. I think we're currently trying to dial out to Erica, and we'll let you know when she joins the audio bridge. Now, from staff, David Olive has sent his apology for today's call. We have Mary Wong, Marika Kernings, Julie Headland, Steve Chan, Amir Al-Sadir, Emily Barabas, Barry Cobb, Terry Agnew, we have Mike Brennan for technical support, and myself, Natalie Peregrine. I'd like to remind you all to please remember to state your names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, James, and to you.
Thank you, Natalie, and welcome everyone to the GNSO Council call for 24th of August. As per our agenda, does anyone have any updates to their statements of interest or status of a counselor? Please raise your hand in the Adobe room or break in on the audio bridge. Okay, seeing none, we'll move on then to review our agenda. As you note, item 6 has been proposed to there's been some chatter on the list to replace item 6, the council discussion on changing the name of the GNSO. That has been withdrawn. And in its place, there is a proposal to elevate one of our previous items of additional business, which is the report from the chairs on our call with the leadership of the sub-pro PDP regarding the WorkTrack 5 GeoNames work team. We'll cover that as item 6, unless there are any objections from councillors to this change to our agenda. Please raise your hand if you have objections or questions regarding this this proposal. Okay, we'll consider that agenda change adopted. Finally, noting that the status of the minutes for two previous meetings were posted on June 28th, July 13th, and August 3rd. Those meetings are now available at the link. Those meetings are now available at the links that are appearing on your screen. And as Ruben's notes, we can now strike AOB 9.2. We'll remind us when we get to that. Okay. Let's then move on to a review of our projects and action items list. If we could ask staff to please load the projects document. Okay. Thank you very much. The projects document is now loaded, and you can see the status of the various GNSO work streams, including the item here that notes the council deliberations for cross-community working group to develop the framework for use of country and territory names. That is item number 4 on today's agenda. We have 2 items that are still pending in board vote, which is, of course, the IGO-INGO and the GEO Regions Review. And then we have several items still in implementation. Any questions or comments or discussion on our open project? Okay, kind of a team audience this morning, but I'm sure that'll change here as we get going. So if we could ask them to load the action items list, please. Okay, thank you. Just a note that items that are green are complete and will not appear in next
week's
action items. I'm sorry, was there someone trying to speak? Okay. Items that are green are completed and will not appear on the next meeting's action item list. Items that are blue appear on our agenda for today, and items that are yellow are pending or ongoing. So approval of our representative to the empowered community is complete. We have adopted the fundamental bylaws changes. As part of the Empowered Community, we have completed the pilot program for PDP Leadership Sponsored Travel. We're discussing ICANN 60 schedule today, although that may more appropriately be yellow rather than blue because I think that might go on for one more meeting yet. We have our GNSO response to the GATT communique from Johannesburg. We can talk about that in the next item. The Standing Committee on the Budgets and Operations really is an idea at this point and something that we need to put some meat behind to get that kicked off. Charter for CCWGIG, as mentioned, is on our agenda. We have a privacy proxy implementation adoption of IRTPC that is pending. We're awaiting some discussions to come out of the Registrar Stakeholder Group. The Red Cross reconvened PDP is underway. The IGO-INGO PDP recommendations ongoing. Hoping that that was someone else and I'm not disconnected. Okay. And then the PDP improvements is also tagged here as ongoing. So that is how our action item list stands, and I think that we should probably just change ICANN 60 from yellow, but otherwise. Okay, thank you. Okay, let's then move on to agenda item 2.2, which is a report of the results of the electronic vote on our response to the GATT communique. First off, I just want to note to everyone, thank you very much for those who worked on this response. I know it was coming at a difficult time between meetings. And also, we were trying to do so on our own calendar in such a way to not have to schedule a supplemental meeting. And so by holding this, by working offline and then holding this ballot electronically, I think we were able to avoid burdening everyone's calendars with additional GNSO meetings. So I think at this point we can, if it's necessary, we can pull up the exact count, but I think it is, we can ask staff to confirm that the electronic ballot was adopted, I believe, unanimously. And that communique response was transmitted to the board in late July, early August. And I believe that was a component in the board's discussion with the GAC to review the Johannesburg communique, which occurred about a week ago. And the latest update is that the chairs are working with staff to obtain a transcript or recording of that meeting, and I don't believe that that's available yet, but it is something that we are following up, and we'll certainly distribute that to the council and the GNSO community once that's available. That's the status of our communique, our response to the Johannesburg communique. Any discussions or questions on that? Okay, great. Agenda item 3 is our consent agenda, which is currently empty, so we'll move on. Agenda item 4 is our vote on the CCWG Internet Governance. This motion was deferred from our last meeting, which means it is no longer eligible for a deferral today. We can discuss it, we can amend it, and I think there were some proposed amendments on the mailing list that have been have since been adopted and incorporated into the motion. Keith, as the originator of the motion, would you be willing to introduce this motion and read us the resolve clauses, and then we'll begin the discussion. Otherwise, if you are...
Yes, thank you, James.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, James. This is Keith Trazik. I'm happy to read the resolve clauses. Just to confirm, do you not want me to read the whereas clauses? They did not change since the last reading. I'm happy to do it if necessary, but if we can skip to the resolve clauses in the interest of time, that would be great as well.
Yeah, Keith, I think since they are unchanged from last month and the motion was deferred, I don't think it's necessary to read them again. I think folks are fairly well familiar with that. I think it's more, let's focus on the new language for the resolve clauses, if you don't mind.
Yep, perfect. Thanks. Okay, so again, I'd like to thank everybody, before I read the resolve clauses, everybody for the input that you've provided. Rafiq and Wolf Ulrich, in particular, provided some substantive comments and recommendations via email, and we had some conversations on the previous call, and I was pleased to be able to accept, you know, sort of this final batch of recommendations as friendly, and James, as the seconder of the motion, accepted them as friendly. So thanks to everybody for the good work in between our meetings. So the resolve clauses are, number one, the GNSO Council expresses its gratitude to the CCWG IG for its work in ensuring that discussions on internet governance take place within the ICANN context. Two, the GNSO Council emphasizes that it fully recognizes the importance of the continued involvement of the ICANN community in internet governance-related activities that are appropriate to the ICANN, to ICANN's mission. Three, the GNSO Council requests that members of the CCWG IG and other interested parties come together to explore a framework or model that more fully addresses the concerns that have been expressed by the GNSO Council and submit this framework or model to the GNSO Council for its consideration at the Council meeting midway between ICANN 60 and ICANN 61. And I have in parentheses here, insert date if we have one, January or February seem appropriate. My recommendation is that we use the February GNSO Council date, which is the one immediately prior to the March ICANN 61 meeting. So I just want to pause here and ask if anybody feels strongly one way or the other whether it should be January or February.
Thanks, Keith, and noting that I think the council calendar for 2018 is still TBD, so I don't know that we have a whole lot of information. January or February sounds appropriate to me.
Okay. Thanks, James. I'll continue then. Four, to facilitate the work as requested under Resolve Clause Number 3, allowing for a reasonable time to coordinate with other SOs and ACs to develop a new structure and to ensure there is no gap between the retirement of the CCWGIG, there's a typo there, and the establishment of its successor group. The GNSO Council shall withdraw as a chartering organization from the CCWGIG effective at the conclusion of ICANN 61 in San Juan, expecting that a replacement structure will be ready for approval by the Council at that time. 5. The GNSO Council emphasizes that its planned withdrawal as a chartering organization from the CCWGIG reflects solely the Council's conclusion that, based on the reports it has received from the CCWGIG, a CCWG is not an appropriate vehicle for the CCWGIG's work, and the GNSO Council's decision on this narrow point is not intended to prevent any GNSO community members who have been participating in the CCWGIG from continuing to participate in the group's activities should they decide to do so. 6, the GNSO Council requests that the GNSO Secretariat communicate this decision to the CCWGIG and the other chartering organizations. And I think that's
it.
So, James, back to you. Yep.
Thank you, Keith. Excellent. And thanks for pinning down the language on Resolve 3 regarding the midway meeting between ICANN 60 and 61. That's the motion language resulting from the acceptance of the friendly amendments. We can now table the motion for discussion. If anyone would like to speak to this, has questions about some of the recent changes, or how this will play out over the next 6 to 8 months. Waiting for that to clear. Okay, for the next 6 to 8 months. Now we'll open the queue for questions, and particularly if those folks who were discussing this item on the mailing list have other thoughts, now's a good time to raise those as well. First up is Heather. Heather, go ahead.
Thanks, James. Heather Forrest. Just to note, the IPC is happy to support the motion, is keen to see the internet governance framework that will develop out of this in a form other than cross-community working group. There was a fair bit of discussion within the constituency as to the timing and the logistics in terms of other chartering organizations having adequate time to consider the framework, you know, now that we've given our February date. I think that's, from our perspective, from Council's perspective, that's perfectly appropriate. We just need to consider whether other SOs and ACs will be able to act quickly enough to do whatever it is that they need to do with that framework accordingly. So wanted to put that comment in the record. Thanks, James.
Thank you, Heather. Noted, and next up is Rafiq. Go ahead, Rafiq.
Okay, thanks. Rafiq speaking. First I want to thank Keith and also Walter Rick for that suggestion and the amendments done in the motion so we can find a common ground and something accept. Joining the comment from Heather, I think it's quite important to synchronize and coordinate with the SO and ACs. Maybe you kind of forgot about that, but if we can understand with the motion, we will communicate the decision to them, but just if we can start at early stage regarding how what is the best timeline to get the proposal reviewed and when they can approve. It's also for us, I think, in the working group, so we can schedule our work and try to deliver as soon as possible. So.
Thank you, Rafiq.
Keith? Thanks, James, and thanks to Heather and to Rafiq for highlighting the fact that coordination will absolutely be necessary among the chartering organizations I just do want to note that during the face-to-face meeting of the CCWG IG in Johannesburg, that there was actually some discussion, some detailed discussion about this challenge. So I think there is a recognition, and I typed some of this into chat, but I just wanted to state it for the record, that there's a recognition across all of the chartering organizations that that this work is probably both necessary and imminent. There's even during the session in Johannesburg, and I'm sure it's available in the transcripts, there was a question posed to the room as to whether anybody in the room felt strongly, or I think the word that was used was, is anybody in the room wedded to this work having to be done in a CCWG, in a CCWG structure? And around the room, everybody sort of agreed that it was not necessary to be in a CCWG, and that perhaps an alternate structure would be a better fit. So in separate conversations with different representatives from ALAC and CCNSO, I've heard personally that I think they're moving in the same direction that we are, perhaps maybe not as quickly as we are, but that there's a recognition that that cross-community work is still important, and that it's important to find a structure where we can continue to engage across the various community silos or structures, and just make sure that it can be done in a way that respects the formal structure of a CCWG. So I think the expectation is that that work should begin pretty quickly. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Keith. Cheryl, you're up next. Please go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Jane. Sure, I'd like to know for the record. Keith just mentioned the ALAC, so I thought I'd just make a clear statement to the Council here, and that is to say that at the meeting before Johannesburg, in fact, when we more recently looked at and continued our endorsement of activities on behalf of the ALAC for internet governance work, the resolution that the ALAC passed was specifically non-committal on the type of vehicle, but committed to the process. So that's absolutely in keeping, and happy to report that as a result of any of the GNSO Council's deliberations and resolvings, there will be no need for the ALAC to shift any of their current resolutions at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl, for that update. The queue is clear. I just want to say thanks to Keith and Rafiq and Heather for their contributions. I think to Keith's point, we are perhaps a little bit out in front of the rest of the community on this, but not by much, given our conversations from going back to Johannesburg and Copenhagen. I think our commitment to the subject matter of internet governance is unchanged, and that was part of our initial conversations with the other communities, the CCNSO and the ALAC, going back to Hyderabad this time last year. So it sounds like this motion captures that timeline and captures that commitment as well, and then projects our path forward through ICANN 60 and ICANN 61. Okay, Stephanie, last word on this one, and then I'll move to close the queue. Go ahead, Stephanie.
Thanks very much, Stephanie Perrin, for the record. I just wondered if anyone had a concept of what particular structure we have in mind replacing this with.
Thanks, Stephanie. I think there has been some discussion on that, but nothing has been pinned down. I think one of the potential options floated were models for work that's currently occurring in other parts of the community. But I'll let Keith respond. Go ahead, Keith.
Hey, thanks, James, and thanks, Stephanie, for the question. I think in an email going back a few weeks, maybe even a little bit longer, I suggested that, from my perspective, this could be as simple as changing the name of the group and not necessarily having a whole lot of detailed or complex structure or obligations behind it. you know, of course, there's the other end of the spectrum that, you know, where somebody might feel like we need to have, you know, whatever's going on in this group, whatever we call it, you know, sort of a clear line of responsibility and reporting and things like that. So, you know, I had suggested that perhaps just change the name to be a discussion group or an engagement group, and problem solved, because the name CCWG, Cross Community Working Group, has a formal and very clear definition in the ICANN space. That was the result of the CCWG on CCWGs. We could call it something else, like a discussion group or an engagement group, and it doesn't carry the same implications of being something as formal. So I think that's a conversation that the group needs to have, and that the council, you know, and the other chartering organizations need to have, is, you know, how formal do we want this group to be? And do we, in a sense, you know, tie its hands or limit its effectiveness by creating a lot of formal structure? And maybe it needs to be a little bit more freewheeling, but fully transparent. I think those are all important questions, but I don't think anybody has the clear answer at this point. But I expect that, you know, the next 7 or 8 months should give us, as a community, the time to figure that out. Hope that's helpful. Thanks.
Thanks, Keith. Very helpful. And I note that there's some similar comments in the same vein in the chat that are reinforcing some of your comments. Next up is Rafiq. Go ahead, Rafiq.
Okay, thanks. That's Rafiq speaking. My understanding is that we are asking the working group to make a proposal, a new structure. So I see there are some ideas, like discussion group and so on, but still I think we should not preempt any solution for now. We are tasking the working group, and it will take in consideration the different requirement and also what was raised as a concern previously in the council, but in other space too. So, for example, I think we will take in consideration what the comments from Heather about the communication loop and the accountability and so on. So the group should work on that, taking into consideration all those elements, and try to propose a new structure that can be cross-community and so on. Just maybe for information, like we get a document previously from the GNSO, which is listing the different structure that the GNSO created in previous year. So we can start with that, using the description and develop around that. So I think there are different options. And my understanding from the motion that we are tasking the working group to do the homework and to maybe to make one or different proposals. So we will see what that will be the outcome from that work. Thanks.
Thanks, Rafiq. And just to echo your last point there, that this question of what the successor organization looks like is exactly what we're asking the CCAWG to come up with in the next few months, and probably not something that we're going to effectively solve during this call in the next 4 minutes. But it is something, it is good to note that is something that the GNSO Council is aware of and mindful of, and to Heather's point, is also looking for certain elements of communication, reporting, and accountability. So the idea of taking a look at other work streams and as a model, and socializing those with the other SOs and ACs to ensure that they have compatible working groups as well, I think is probably a good starting place, as Rafiq mentioned. So the queue is clear. I'd like to move then that we transition item number 4 to a vote. If there are no objections, I'd like to proceed with a acclamation vote. Unless anyone is concerned, we can certainly do a roll call. Okay, no objections. So, Natalie, if you don't mind, if we could move to a vote on item number 4 by acclamation.
Thank you very much, James. Would anyone like to abstain from this motion? Please say your name now. Hearing no one, would anyone like to vote against this motion? Hearing none, would all those in favor of the motion please say aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Can Phil Cohen, proxy for Susan Kawaguchi, please express your vote and say aye.
Aye for Susan.
Thank you very much. No abstention, no objections. The motion passes, James. Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie, and thank you, counselors, and thanks to everyone who has worked on this topic over the last several meetings and also for the work that's yet to come. I appreciate the commitment for everyone involved, including me, of course, the CCWGIG folks and the contributing members from other communities. Okay, let's then move to item number five. The item number five is a replacement, it's another motion, it's a replacement for the GNSO representative to the SSR2 review team. As many of you are aware, Emily Taylor, who was previously a GNSO member and I believe a co-chair of that group, stepped aside recently, and we've asked the SSC, the Standing Selection Committee, to engage in finding a replacement with an emphasis first on, I think, looking at the alternate members that were identified during the initial creation of this slate of GNSO delegates to this review team. And the good news is the SSC has taken this up and very quickly come back with a proposal for replacement, and that's the motion that we have in front of us today. So if Yolf is available and would like to present the motion, I'd gladly turn this over to Yolf and have him read through read the motion into the record. Yolf, would you do the honors?
Sure. I assume it's enough to it's enough to go through the resolved, I guess.
Yes, and just for the record, I will second this motion so that we can begin the discussion. I noticed that we were absent a seconder.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, James. Okay, so the motion's resolved part, so one, the GNSO Council nominates Norm Ritchie to replace Emily Taylor on the SSR2RT. Two, the GNSO Council instructs the GNSO Secretariat to communicate result number one to the staff supporting the SSR2RT as soon as possible. Three, the GNSO Council instructs the GNSO Secretariat to inform the selected applicant that he has been chosen, and that the GNSO Council expects that the applicant will represent the views of the entire GNSO community in his work on the SSR2RT, and provide regular feedback as a group on the discussions taking place in the SSR2RT, as well as the positions being taken by GNSO review team members. Four, the GNSO Council asks the GNSO Secretariat to send a response to those applicants who were not selected, thanking them for their continued interest. Response should also encourage them to follow the SSR2RT work and participate in public comments and community discussions. There we go.
Thank you, Yolf, and thank you to the SSC. I know Susan is high up in the Andes and probably not able to attend our call, but thanks for everyone who worked on this. I do have one question regarding the resolved four, and then we'll open the queue for discussion. When we say that we're sending a response to applicants who are not selected, do we mean the other alternate members aside from Mr. Ritchie, or are we talking about other folks, for example, that may have expressed an interest in joining the SSR2 in the interim? I'm not really clear who we're sending this response to. Yolf, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, we did go back to the soft candidates who were not selected in the first round and asked if they are still prepared to stand, so they are kind of knowing that they kind of were candidates, so they are the ones we want to inform.
Okay, thank you, Yul, for that clarification, and certainly we'll work with staff to make sure that that's clear and that goes out to those affected individuals. Okay, that's an open queue. Does anyone have any comments or questions regarding this motion? And just to reiterate, I did second the motion, so we can correct that in the language above, please. Okay, the queue is clear. If there's no objections, then we can move to a vote by acclamation. Natalie, would you do the honors?
Thank you very much. Would anyone like to abstain from this motion? Please say your name now. Hearing no one, would anyone like to vote against this motion? Hearing none, would all those in favor of the motion please say aye.
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 Thank you. Phil Cohen, proxy for Susan Kawaguchi, please say aye.
Yes, Susan votes aye.
Thank you very much, Phil. No abstention, no objection to the motion. It passes. Thank you, James.
Thank you, Natalie. Thank you, counselors. Special thanks to the SSC and to Norm for continuing his interest and to expanding his commitment in this role, and we will communicate and work with him to get this change effected as quickly as possible. So thank you, everyone, for that. Okay, moving then to the next item of business, which is a discussion of the report from the GNSO chairs on our conversation with the sub-pro PDP co-chairs regarding Work Track 5. Certainly we'll defer to Heather and Donna to weigh in as they see fit. I'll try and kick off this topic here, and I'm sure I'll, at this early hour, I'll probably miss something. But there was quite a bit of discussion on the list about the nature and structure of Work Track 5. And just as a refresher, Work Track 5 is being created in the wake of the discussions, cross-community discussions in Johannesburg, as a means to tackle the issue of geo names in subsequent rounds of new GTLD applications. And this is a mechanism by which an existing PDP that is exploring all of the issues associated with the subsequent rounds of new GTLDs and folding this issue of geo names under that that umbrella of that PDP. The leaders of that PDP, Jeff Newman and Avery Doria, have proposed this idea. This is somewhat innovative idea of Work Track 5, which would be a sub-team of the PDP, but would, in many respects, resemble a cross-community sub-team or some other animal that doesn't exactly exist in ICANN. But it would have leadership representation from other SOs and ACs, particularly the GAC, the CCNSO, ALAC, et cetera. And they are working to put out invitations to kick off that effort. There's been some discussions on the list as to what the role for the GNSO Council is and you know, in managing Work Track 5. And I think the conclusion is that, you know, that we have traditionally allowed PDPs to create and dissolve sub-teams as they see fit to address their needs and purposes. And this Work Track 5 would certainly be no different, despite the fact that it is taking on a broader topic and including membership from outside the GNSO, which is certainly something that we've always encouraged. So how will it, I think the two issues that were discussed on our list would be how would it, you know, arrive at decisions on its group, and how would those decisions roll up to the broader PDP, and would those decisions still be subject to consensus on the PDP, and then, of course, a council vote before they'd be submitted onto the board. So that's generally, I'll just kick off the topic there, the discussion of Work Track 5. And to address these questions, myself, Donna, and Heather scheduled a call with the PDP co-chairs to discuss some of these questions and to confirm their expectations for Work Track 5 and how it will operate, how it will arrive at decisions. And additionally, I think one of the other takeaways is that we want to ensure that the GNSO delegates to the ICANN board are aware of Work Track 5 as well, and make sure that they are up to speed on what this is and what it's doing and socializing that concept amongst the board. So that's kind of where we left it for now, and I would certainly defer to Heather or to Donna if they'd like to add any color or context to that. But otherwise, I have a cue right now. It's just Paul. Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, James. Paul McGrady for the record. So with this one, I don't think that there's much concern that you know, whatever the work track 5 comes up with wouldn't go through the normal consensus process for the main working group. That's how it's been set up. Nor any concern that that it would bypass the GNOSO Council ultimately. I'm also not concerned that it looks more like a cross-community working group sub-team. I think in the ideal world, if we had, you know, if we had all parts of the community participating within the GNOSO consensus building process, that's what these would look like a lot. And so, and there certainly is no rule against anybody participating who wants to. And so neither of those are a concern that I have. The reason why I wanted to elevate this topic is just because I'm a little concerned about whether or not we're getting that participation at the leadership level. So with my hat on as the council liaison to this particular, reached out to Aubrey and asked where we were with that. Aubrey was kind enough to respond, even though she's really out of pocket right now. And she said that essentially that the CCNSO has decided on Annabeth Lang and that ALAC has sent a message saying they're still working on it, they need more time. And I guess as of a few days ago, I guess it was Sunday, so it was more than a few days ago, that they hadn't heard yet from the GAC. And so I'm wondering if we could you know, if there's anything that the council could do to, continue to reach out to the GAC to see if we can get them to let us know who their leadership person may be and to make sure that they're feeling, you know, extremely welcome into this process. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Yes, that was an important component of our discussion is buy-in and participation from all members of the community. It's good to note that we've had some updates. Your information is actually a little more current than mine. I think that we will continue to work with staff and work with the leadership of the PDP to ensure that the GAC is aware of this invitation and encouraged to participate. I would note that the GNSO also, although this is a GNSO PDP, the GNSO also is encouraging some folks to volunteer to the PDP co-chairs to make sure that the GNSO is also one of the co-leaders of Work Track 5. So yes, absolutely. The worst thing that we could do here is not achieve the desired buy-in or participation despite rolling out the red carpet for everyone in the community and encouraging them to join. And certainly that is, you know, that's going to be a key ingredient to the success. So thank you very much for highlighting that. But it sounds like we're still in process with some of the other SOs and ACs. Next up is Phil. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, James. Phil for the record. And this is a subject that I have aired with members of the business constituency, and we engaged in some discussion on our last BC call last week. And I wanted to make sure I wasn't out on my own and had the backing of the BC and on this question. And I do. Before speaking, I just have one question perhaps Heather or Donna can answer, is whether the conversation with the co-chairs has yielded any more light on what decision-making process will be employed by this work team. My understanding, and it may be incorrect, is that where it kind of was is that they were telling us, well, it can use, they weren't really defining what it would say, but saying, well, it can use any decision-making process it wants because whatever it reports back to the full working group can be reviewed and altered under standard GNSO process. Is that still the state of play, or is there any more clarity as to it's the work team's decisional process? I just had that question, and I'll speak more fully to this issue.
Yes, thanks, Bill, and I'll respond quickly. I know Heather jumped in the queue, so maybe she wants to address that as well. But yes, we did discuss that, and I think that is your understanding is a fair assessment of the response, that this work team would be given some fairly broad latitude, like all PVP subteams, to arrive at its own decision making. However, that once that rolled up into the broader PVP, it would be subject to the consensus level. Just wait for that to clear. The consensus levels that were defined in the PDP operating manual, and those would then take over. Heather, I saw your hand go up and then down, so I apologize if I jumped on top of your response there, but feel free to weigh in on this as well.
Thanks, James. Heather Forrest, just to very quickly add, for the point of emphasis, not so much add but emphasize, this is just like any other PDP working group. I think the only thing that's a bit different here is that we're taking the opportunity to ensure that we have leadership from other SOs and ACs. You know, it's certainly the case that we have other PDP working groups right now that have involvement from other SOs and ACs, and we've got work tracks with leaders from other SOs and ACs, and so that's other SOs. Cheryl, you're ALAC. So I don't see this as being any difference. The job of those leaders will be to ensure that there's balance, but this is going to be business as usual, really. Thanks.
Thanks, Heather. Yeah, I think, and just one final point before we continue on the queue to Phil's question. One area of caution that we did flag for the GNS or for the PDP leadership was the potential scenario where this work team 5 were to arrive at a decision that did not achieve consensus support amongst the PDP, the PDP at large, meaning the plenipotentiary or whatever of the PDP. So for example, we would, extend all of these invitations, we would get broad participation, there would be some mechanism to make a decision, and then that decision would fail either at the broader PDP or possibly even at the council level. And that, in a way, would backfire on this attempt to broaden participation on this topic. And so we made sure that the PDP co-chairs were aware of that risk, and that they were monitoring Work Track 5 and managing those expectations accordingly. So that was just one other point on that. But otherwise, I think Heather nailed it. So we have a queue developing here, Phil. I don't know if you had more to add, or if that...
Yeah, well, actually, I do. I wanted that question answered. This will take me a minute or so, but I do want to address the substance, because I do think this is important, and I know that my constituency thinks this is an important issue. The council has a clear role here in that we chartered this working group. They derived their authority from council. I know, I'm speaking for myself and my constituency, we welcome the participation of other groups from outside the GNSO in this process. We've been, including at the leadership level, we've been striving for that for several years, certainly in regard to the GAC. But the one place I think we need to draw the line in a diplomatic way is to indicate that the imposition, while the participation of these non-GNSO groups is welcome, that the imposition of a cross-community type decision-making process would not be acceptable. This work team is a sub-team of the full working group. It derives its authority from the full working group. It operates within the rules of the GNSO. To be honest, I know we've heard that the full working group will review its recommendations, but we all know that if it achieves consensus, if it achieves a decision, any modification by that of that by the full working group is likely to be quite modest, just around the edges. But if we don't make clear that the its decision-making process must be one that's consistent with GNSO rules, frankly, we make the situation more charged and make it more difficult for the working group to change its recommendations anyway, because it introduces a non-substantive element, a political element, where if they use a CC-type decisional process, which would be one vote per AC or SO, it opens up a situation where if any significant change is made at the full working group level, those groups outside the GNSO, and probably in particular the GAC, will charge, will see the GNSO process does not give full accord to the views of the entire ICANN community. So I'm not suggesting we intervene now or in a heavy-handed manner. We don't want to do anything that discourages participation from outside the GNSO in this work team. But I do think that at some point we need to not dictate a decisional process for this work team, but simply reassert the view that whatever decision-making mode it employs to reach final conclusions to report back to the full working group must be consistent with GNSO rules. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil. And just to be clear, I don't think anything that you've just stated, either on your personal behalf or on behalf of the BC, is at odds with the message that that we took to the PDP leaders and the message that we left them as far as setting expectation for both participation and decision-making of this work team. I see Donna's in the queue, and Rafiq, if you don't mind, she was at that meeting, so I'd like to go to her next. Donna, you want to respond?
Yeah, thanks, James, and thanks, Phil. So, Phil, I think, you know, what you've outlined is important, and I think it will be, once the co-leaders for this group is identified, I think it will be important for probably Jeff and Avery as the working group leaders of the overall task to take the work track leadership through the process and how they expect it to work. So, you know, maybe a little bit of a educational tutorial on this is the way that we do business, and this is the way we expect this work track to work, and this is the steps in the process that it will go through. I think that will be really important, you know, before this work track kicks off, so that everybody's on the same page and understand the expectation moving forward as to how this group will work. So I think that will be an important piece of the bringing this team together. So and I'm pretty sure that Jeff and Avery already have that in the back of their minds anyway. But thanks for raising it, Phil.
Okay, thank you, Donna. Thank you, Phil. Good discussion here. And next up is Rafiq. Go ahead, Rafiq.
Hey, thanks, it's Rafiq speaking. So maybe just to first to comment about the concerns from Phil. I don't think the co-chairs of the working group are trying to replicate cross-community working group model and the work track. It's more about cross-community participation. And so I think we can just maybe remind about that the work, the work track of that sub-team will follow the working group guidelines in the matter of decision-making. I think that's why I also asked it in the mailing list, if just we can outline those kind of, to remind about this and to give them guidance. I don't think we should have any prejudice in how the sub-team will work. And I really do think that
I believe that Jeff and Avery will really follow the guidelines, I mean, based on their own their experience in many working groups. And also, I trust having Paul as liaison, he will monitor and probably report to us if there is anything of concern. So, I mean, I understand here the concern that we are, maybe there is a risk of precedent that we try to use the cross-community model for whatever topic, including for the PDP, and so that can we delete the, our ability as a genitor to manage our own process. But still, if we keep following the guidelines, I don't see any risk for now. So just we can monitor, and if then there is anything alarming, then we can intervene. So we should not be kind of preempt any way or methods for working. And so on that, I think since we are trying to get the participation of the GAC and CCNSO and to be aligned and consistent with our own response to the GAC communique, I encourage that the leadership of the GNSO to reach the GAC and ask them to appoint someone to the work track 5, and also for our side in the GNSO to task the SSC to work on appointing someone from the GNSO as a co-leader, so that we need to show a leadership from our side too, and to support the co-chair work on that matter. Okay.
Thank you, Rafiq. I agree with your first intervention that we should trust the processes, trust the leadership, and certainly trust our liaison to this group, Paul, to manage the work of this working group and to flag anything for council that would require an intervention. I disagree with your second part. As far as appointing the GNSO co-leader to work track 5, the GNSO typically does not use its either its old processes or the new SSC to appoint PDP chairs or work team chairs or co-chairs or vice chairs. And I don't know that in this particular situation that we would want to weigh in with, you know, in a heavyweight management style, that we would continue to defer those types of organizational and structuring decisions to the PDP leadership. I certainly would welcome further discussion on this if I'm alone in these thoughts, but I think that the PDP leaders have the co-chairs have a process to invite and select members or delegates or co-leaders to work track 5, and I think that they should include the GNSO in that outreach effort, and that we as a council should allow them to do that as any other PDP would. But I'm certainly, if this is, you know, something that folks would like to discuss.
Can I respond to that quickly?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, thanks, James. I think the co-chairs already outreached to us, and that's why I talked about the SSC. I think they asked us, and because then their communication to the different SO and SEs to appoint someone. So that was my understanding. I don't have really any specific take in which who will appoint, I mean, SSC or even the council, but just I want to say that the GNSO maybe should take the lead here and appoint first co-leader. But just I recall that we received communication for the co-chairs about appointing someone. So I don't think they were expecting to make the call themselves and so on.
Okay, thanks, Rafiq. Well, I think where we are now is that we're still in the process of building the leadership for Work Track 5. So what I'd like to do to start to wind down this topic is noting that a lot of the discussions that we've had here today and on the list of this topic were very similar to the communications that we had with Jeff and Avery. I think that all of the concerns and expectations and aspirations for this, for participation in the Work Track 5 and its work are shared and understood. across that group. The co-chairs have also reported to the GNSO members of the ICANN board, and that's Becky, Marcus, and Matthew, made them aware of what we're doing and what this PDP is up to, and hopefully allowing them to socialize that with their colleagues on the board and make sure that everyone at the board level is aware of this as well. I think we're going to be relying fairly heavily on our liaison to this PDP, and that's Paul, to table at future council meetings any issues where perhaps the work team 5 is coloring a little too far outside the line. But otherwise, I think we are at this stage in the game, a very early stage in the game, we are treating it as a PDP under the PDP rules, and we are giving them some broad discretion to organize this work train, work track 5. So, you know, that's the state of the situation as it is today, and I think that we're doing well, and I think we should commend Jeff and Aubrey for trying this novel approach and this reinforced effort to try and get cross community participation on this topic. So I'm sure we will see more of this in the weeks and months to come. But at this stage of the game, I think that we all have a very clear understanding of the path forward. So thanks for all who participated, and I hope that you will continue to monitor this diligently. Thanks. Okay, moving then to agenda item number 7, we have a discussion which is a review of the ICANN procedure for handling WHOIS conflicts with local privacy law. As you recall, we adopted the last review of that, which was a bit overdue. I believe we did that in Hyderabad, and we had a nice couple of meetings where we didn't talk about this topic, but it's back and bigger than ever. So with that, we'll turn it over to, I believe, Cyrus is on the call from GDD, ICANN Global Domains, and we'll have Cyrus present a letter that was recently sent to me and Donna and Heather via Akram and was posted to the council list. So Cyrus, if you're on the call, please take it away.
Thank you, James. This is Cyrus. Greetings, everybody, from Los Angeles. I actually have Eliza Agopian from my team with me here, who is going to walk you through the details of the review and the letter that we drafted and sent to the council leadership, along with some proposed actions by the staff. Eliza, please.
Sure. Happy to help. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. I'm just going to briefly walk you through the letter since you've obviously already read it. I don't want to read it back to you. But in short, I wanted to summarize our approach. When you asked for a review of this particular procedure, we kicked it off by going back and revisiting some of the discussions that happened in the predecessor group, the implementation advisory group that actually proposed the alternative trigger that was just incorporated into the revised procedure. We looked at some of the discussions that happened there and thought that the best way to approach a review and an assessment of the procedure itself was to see where the opinions were falling then, as well as elicit some more discussion from government representatives, from other contracted parties, registries, registrars, and other interested parties to see what their take is and if they've attempted to use the procedure yet. As I'm sure you all know, no one has yet used the procedure as it stands, nor had they used it in its previous form before we revised it with the alternative trigger. So we were kind of at a loss as to how to review something that hasn't actually worked in function. As a result, we came up with a paper that we published back in a few months ago. I think it was in April or May. And we received quite a bit of response, which was great, both from government members, from GAC, from data protection authorities in various jurisdictions, not just Europe, which I know is a place where this has been of particular concern. And we put together the staff report of public comments and subsequently recently sent you this letter that you see before you from Akram et al. That outlined a couple of options that we see as a path forward. As we noted in the letter, we're not limited to these options. These just seem to be perhaps your best bet for tackling what I know many in this group have raised as the challenges of utilizing the procedure. So just to briefly outline them, we suggested pursuing an expedited PDP to get back to the underlying policy issue that resulted in this procedure in the first place. But we do know that even under an expedited PDP, that could take, you know, at least 1 year, if not longer, to complete, and then, of course, to implement a procedure from there. Then, of course, there's a standard PDP, which would, of course, have a longer time frame. And then finally, we suggested the consideration that you consider adopting one or both of the other alternative triggers that were proposed by the predecessor group, the implementation advisory group, one being the contracted party request trigger, which would obviously come at the initiation of that registry or registrar, indicating what the conflict is with national laws. And including written support from the relevant data protection authority or whatever government agency is relevant, as well as a legal opinion trigger where the trigger would actually come from a, you know, reputable law firm, an opinion from a reputable law firm. So these are the options that we outline. We are here to discuss those with you. If you have questions, we are also open to any other ideas you might have. So I'll just leave it there briefly so you can have your time to discuss. Thank you.
Thank you, Eliza and Cyrus. Just to note that this letter was received, I believe, on the first week of August and circulated to the list shortly thereafter. So hopefully folks have had an opportunity to read it and digest it. And I'm looking a little bit to staff here because I don't have the exact dates, but part of our motion that was adopted previously on the IAG indicated that we would reconstitute or revisit this issue in the fall, and I thought that that was sometime in the September-October timeframe or possibly as late as the end of this year. I don't know if this letter augments that request or could possibly be fodder for that work, or if it would kick off that work a little earlier or supplement it in some way. I mean, I think that's one possibility. I'd certainly entertain discussion from council on the options that are outlined in this letter. I think when this topic has come up in the past, I think we have called it the agenda killer because we get stuck in it and we just can't seem to get ourselves out. So I would caution folks to focus on the process of what we do here as far as the outlined procedural options or how we fit it into our existing or planned work plans and not start litigating the subject of who is and local privacy, because it seems like that's the temptation that we have trouble resisting and it always takes us off the rails. So that would be my only bit of guidance on this, and I see we have a cue from starting with Michele. So go ahead, Michele.
Thanks, James. Michele for the record. I mean, this letter, I think, from Akram and his team is helpful because it does kind of concentrate and focus minds on a number of options and also gives some of the downsides to the various options. Any form of PDP is going to drag on for a year, 2 years, possibly longer, and considering the amount of work that's already undergoing with respect to WHOIS and the upcoming introduction of GDPR, plus other things that we all know are going on, I don't think either of those two options is viable. Speaking personally, if there was a legal opinion trigger available, then it would make it much, much easier for people to at least apply to use this particular policy. As it stands, if the updated triggers, it is the policy that exists that nobody can actually use, which renders it completely useless. By allowing for a contracted party to get a a proper legal opinion from a recognized law firm, then maybe the request would be rejected, but at least you could have you could actually test us and discuss whether the triggers, whether it can be triggered or not. As it stands, even with the new triggers, it's just completely unworkable. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, McKelly. This is something that we've heard previously, which is this is potentially a useful tool if it could be made more accessible. I would put a question. I'll put myself in the queue. Sorry, Paul, go ahead.
Thanks, Paul McGrady for the record. So I guess I have a couple of questions, and I don't know if I should just ask them all at once or let staff respond. But for my primary question really is this action premature? We have a alternative trigger that's only been in place for 4 months. I know McKaylee's of the opinion that it's unusable, but I'm not sure that 4 months is the ultimate window to test that theory. And also, I think when the public comments were sought on this, the new trigger was only a few days old. And so I'm just kind of wondering, is what this letter is suggesting, is it a little early? Should we at least give the alternative trigger a chance to exist out there in the ecosystem for a bit? And so that's in general, question number one. And then question number two, I'm not an expert on the IAG, but I'm pretty sure that a couple of these other proposed processes that staff has put forward again here, or the GDD specifically, has put forward again here, were the subject of hot debate in the IAG, and they couldn't reach agreement on those. And so I guess I'm trying to figure out, specifically, I think they couldn't reach agreement because there was not agreement that they were consistent with the underlying policy itself. And so I guess my second question, in addition to is this premature, has staff, the GDD staff specifically, come to the conclusion that these two additional proposed triggers are consistent with policy, and therefore, even though the IAG couldn't reach agreement on them, they're being re-proposed by GDD staff? Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Two questions there, and it sounds like your second one and possibly the first as well were directed towards in the direction of Cyrus and Eliza. Cyrus, Eliza, would you like to take a shot at responding?
Thank you, James. This is Cyrus. I'll make an attempt in trying to respond to Paul's comments and questions. On the first one, in terms of sort of the maturity of the new trigger mechanism and how long it's actually been in effect, it's a valid point, but I'm not sure if it follows from there that therefore we can't, with enough confidence, deduce that it's really a bar that is not expected to be able to actually trigger the mechanism and provide a useful tool for the staff to relieve potential conflicts with local law. It really does not change the equation from my perspective. We, from the staff side, need to have a mechanism enabled by the policy-making GNSO Council to be able to effectively take in issues that are brought to us in terms of conflicts with national law, be able to process them, and hopefully be able to grant the right waiver to people who are in the danger of being in non-compliance. So I don't think that this particular added trigger mechanism is going to reach to that level to provide the flexibility. I am much more, and this is just my personal opinion, it's obviously up to the council and its leadership to decide it, that a legal opinion has much more utility for us. We have actually a very similar tool for data retention that we have used in the past with our registrar has proven to be a very useful tool. The second one, I would defer to Eliza, who was actually running the IAG. My objection is that, yes, it didn't reach consensus. It was sort of divided among the different participants of the IAG to be able to reach consensus on the other two mechanisms. Elisa, do you have anything to add to that? That was a while ago, unfortunately, about 3 years ago.
Hi, thanks, Cyrus. No, I don't. You're correct. I was around for the IAG, but not for the entirety of it. But from what I recall in the conversations, and I'm looking back on our notes when we were putting our paper together, there was quite a bit of debate about those triggers. And as we noted in the letter, there wasn't consensus reached on either of these. There was some support for them, but clearly consensus support. But that's why we included them in here for you to consider. On the other question regarding whether it's consistent with policy or not, we didn't do an assessment of that. Obviously, we leave that up to the council to decide whether it does meet the expectations of the underlying policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Cyrus and Elisa. Very helpful. And Elisa, I think you anticipated my next question, which was the distinction between something reaching consensus support on the IAG versus something being determined to be consistent with the underlying policy, and I think that is the question that did not reach consensus of whether or not it was consistent. Did I get that right?
I'm sorry, could you say that again? There was a bit of noise in my vicinity.
No problem. So the decision that did not reach consensus on the IAG was whether or not these alternative triggers were consistent with the underlying policy.
I think the debate was more whether or not the IG wanted to support the triggers. I don't think the debate had to do with whether or not it was actually in keeping with the policy. If I recall correctly, they considered their compatibility with the policy before the proposals themselves were distinguished, okay. were proposed.
Okay, thank you. And I'm reading Marika's points in the chat, and I may call on her in a second to elaborate, but it sounds as though, because the GNSO did vote, did consider, and ultimately after several meetings, we did adopt or determine that the proposal from the IAG was consistent with the underlying policy. That was the language of our motion. But I guess these triggers were not included in that slate of proposals that we evaluated because they didn't reach consensus on the IAG. Am I saying that correctly, Marika?
That's correct, exactly. They weren't put forward as a proposal because it wasn't something that the IAG was able to reach consensus on. You're correct.
Okay. And so they've never really been subject to that test, basically.
Exactly.
Okay. Thank you. And I think Marika's hand just went down, so I think, okay, I finally untangled it. Thank you. And I'm sorry for maybe perhaps being the only person in the room that didn't get that. Okay. I put myself in the queue mainly because I wanted to break my own guidance here and talk a little bit about the second to last paragraph. And I'm going to ask Elisa and Cyrus to maybe shed a little bit of light on the interrelationship between this letter and the ongoing work that ICANN is doing relative to exploring some of the issues of GDPR. And I'm just, without opening that can of worms, which usually contains more cans with more worms. Can you just clarify, is this letter being prompted by that work? Is it related to that work? Is it parallel and unrelated? Can you just kind of just characterize this letter and these options? Does ICANN see the policy, the who is conflicts with privacy law policy as perhaps a mechanism that could be employed to address some of the issues associated with GDPR that they're uncovering, or am I just getting too far out ahead of this? I'm interested in the interrelation.
James, this is Cyrus. I'll make an attempt in responding to your question. The short answer to your question is no, and in fact, this is part of the reason that we drafted the letter the way we drafted it. We're not tying this really to the GDPR work, although as one could reasonably surmise, there is probably going to be some interrelation between the ability of ICANN, the organization, being able to grant waivers and some of the new privacy laws that are going into effect, in particular in the European Union region and probably in some other parts of the world. But we wanted to specifically highlight it to the council that we're not tying this effort to that particular exercise and project that is going on, that most of you are aware of the details of it. This is a very important tool that, you know, the policy making engine has given to the ICANN staff. It needs to be, for it to be effective, it needs to sort of be modified, as you all know, and is hopefully highlighted in the letter and in the public comments that we have received and inputs from, in particular, our contracted parties. Michele and others spoke about it. For it to be effective, and for ICANN to be able to utilize it, to be able to work with our contracted parties to keep them from running afoul of local law, it needs to be modified. It needs to be taken a look at again by the council and hopefully be able to be formed into a shape that is useful and effective. But the GDPR exercise is something that's ongoing in parallel. There is a likelihood at some point, hopefully if the trigger mechanism is adopted to be actually more friendly and useful, for lack of a better term, then perhaps it can also be utilized. But I wouldn't actually tie the two words together. I hope that helps.
Thank you, Cyrus. That answers my question exactly. They're related but not connected. Okay. The queue is clear. Not sure how that happened, especially given this topic. Does anyone else have any specific questions on this topic or the letter from Akram while we have Cyrus and Aliza on the call? I'm also trying to keep up with the chat here as we go. Michele, go ahead.
Thanks, James. Michele for the record. Just to understand, because I'm never too good at the mechanics of how some of these things work, if we wanted to look at option three there, which would be the legal opinion trigger and the contracted party request trigger, would we need to put forward a motion to put that there, or how would that work exactly? Could somebody explain that to those of us who are a bit slow with it?
It's a good question, Michele. I think what I would note is that we already have, from a previously adopted motion that Mary's posted in the chat, which I believe goes back to February, that the IAG would review again, because it was overdue, the policy, the procedure, and presumably the triggers. We could, and I'm just saying conceptually, we could refer this letter and these additional alternates to that working group, which is scheduled to begin on October 1st. That is something that's already going to happen and already on our schedule. So we could certainly take this on board and refer it to that work, which of course presumes that group will form on time and will garner sufficient participation and all the other challenges associated with it. But assuming all of that works as planned, then this could be a part of its charter or its mission. Marika has her hand up as well. Did I get that right, Marika?
This is Marika. James, not exactly or not completely, because I don't think necessarily another EAC is required. The procedure doesn't prescribe that a working group or community working group needs to be created. It just talks about doing a review. So at least, and I don't want to speak for Cyrus and Elisa, but so I hope they correct me if I'm wrong. At least I think the staff's thinking was that indeed through public comment there would be views expressed, which then would be turned back to the council for the council to decide how you would want to deal with this. Is it indeed something you want to give to a group to look at again? I do know that some of the options that were considered in the public comments were already considered by a community group that didn't come to agreement. Again, I think, as I posted in the chat as well, I think one option is as well similar to what you did with the previous consideration of the alternatives trigger, for the council to consider these triggers and provide an indication on whether or not you consider these consistent with the policy. Because at the end of the day, if there is indeed the view that the issue is with the implementation of the policy. The council there has kind of an overseeing responsibility. So it's not for the council to say, you know, this is how it should look like or this is how it should look like, but we're looking to the council to indicate, you know, whether or not there is an inconsistency with the underlying policy recommendation if Avenue A or Avenue B is taking. And again, you know, the two, one trigger has been added, two triggers, opinions were requested through the public comment, and I would encourage everyone to review the public comments report as well as the comments submitted, because there are quite a few groups that actually express their perspectives on indeed whether the trigger that has been added, whether it will be workable in practice, as well as views on those alternative triggers that were considered but did not get the consensus necessarily of the EAC. So again, I think that the discussion or question here for the council is really what should be the next step. Is there indeed a need to form a separate group to look at this again? And if so, you know, how would that be different from what has been done before? Does this indeed provide new information that will help inform those deliberations? Or is there another way or path in which this review should be conducted? As said, I believe that the procedure itself doesn't specify how it should be done, so that's really open for discussion and also, you know, dependent on the timeline that you have in mind in reviewing or addressing issues that have been identified.
Okay, thanks, Marika. I do note I have a little bit of discomfort, I guess, with the idea that that council would make a determination of whether triggers that did not arise from an IAG would you know, would be consistent with the policy. It feels like those were tabled and not submitted by the previous IAG, that the only correct avenue for us to consider them would be to come from another IAG. And I think some of what you said would be very appropriate for the first two options, the expedited PDP or full PDP. Council can certainly, we could certainly make a motion to consider those at our next meeting and get those launched and get a staff issues report going and get that to ball rolling. That's something that we could do at this level unilaterally. But noting the downsides that were outlined in the letter, and then also that Michele was, I think his question specifically focused on option three, looking at the alternate triggers. So so it sounds like, you know, we do have kind of a blank piece of paper. We could create a review group or refer it to a group that we know is coming shortly. But the only part I'm not comfortable with is for council to kind of weighed in on the question of whether or not those alternative triggers are consistent without, you know, commissioning a group to do that for us. Noting we have a couple more folks in the queue, and then we'll probably cut it off for there, because that one, this topic is going to be with us, I think, for a while yet. First up is Paul, and then Stefan. Paul?
Thanks, James. Paul McGrady. Really quickly, we'd just like to agree with James about the level of discomfort of the council circumventing the IAG outcomes and circumventing the community on this. I don't think that sounds right. I do recognize that the public comments, which came in a few days after the alternative trigger was introduced, you know, exist. And I am thankful to staff for their letter, but at the same time, I don't think bypassing the community on a topic this important is the way to go. Thank you.
Thanks, Paul. And just to note, I don't know that Cyrus or Akram are recommending that. I think they're kind of laying this out and saying, do this with this what you will. So it's really kind of up to us. I don't believe they were asking us to do an end around.
Yes, I don't think they were either. I think that the suggestion is from others in the chat and otherwise on the call. I don't think it was Cyrus. Thanks.
Okay. We next have Stephanie and then Cyrus. Stephanie.
Thanks very much. Stephanie Perrin for the record. And anybody who's heard me on this topic realizes that, as far as I'm concerned, this whole who is conflicts with law, policy, and procedure is, in Monty Python terms, a dead parrot.
and to continue to spend time on it strikes me as a complete waste of time. I've said that many times when I was on the IAG. I'm just wondering, because I take two points that were raised in the chat. Number one, as Donna says, the trigger's only one part of this difficult, obstreperous, how can we maximally get in the way with compliance with law policy. And I don't think that's sustainable or tenable with the GDPR facing us in May. So fix more than just the trigger. Secondly, as Keith says, we need something and we need it fast. There is a legal opinion that has been obtained through the RDS working group. I believe that that legal opinion helps to make my point that this is a dead parrot. Perhaps if a PDP is going to be struck, it could instantly come up with an ICANN policy on compliance with law, because other countries are going to be following the GDPR lead. We have the GDPR in front of us. That's the imminent threat and very bad risk that ICANN has taken. But other countries will be doing the same thing. They have the mechanism to take entities to court and sue them for money right now. So I just think it's time to do a massive rethink and come up with something rather quickly that allows an organization quickly to comply with local law. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie. I think my concern is that none of these options or that we've discussed include the word quickly. And that's just my my chief concern. Last word on this is Cyrus, and then we will move on to our next agenda item. Cyrus, go ahead.
Thank you, James. I just wanted to slightly from my own personal perspective, and I suppose to some extent from GDD perspective, highlight the fact of you, it's really stating the obvious, that we really have a practical issue at hand on the GDPR side in being able to help support compliance with the local law because of what appears to be somewhat the ineffectiveness of this trigger mechanism. So just wanted to again raise that to your level and the council's level to consider as you discuss how best to approach this, that at the moment there's appears to be an unworkable tool provided to us to be able to help support our contracted parties. So whatever you can do, and of course this is completely at your disposal, in deciding which way to go forward, considering that fact, and I would underline that word, would be important, hopefully, in your deliberations. Thank you very much, by the way, for the time today, James and the Council.
Thank you, Cyrus. Thank you, Aliza. Thanks to all councillors who contributed. And Cyrus and Aliza, please extend our thanks to Akram. Note that we have received this letter. We are discussing it, and it is receiving our wholesome attention. I don't know that we have a, as you can tell from our conversation, we don't have a clear path forward as of yet, as of today on this call. But it is something that is certainly front of mind for the council and for our stakeholder groups. So let's close the discussion on this topic here, and noting we have about 25 minutes left in our call. We have a few more items left on our agenda, including item number 8, which is council planning for ICANN 60 in Abu Dhabi, which is coming up faster than you think. Good news on this is, I believe, and really kudos to GNSO staff and all of the staff and secretariats around the community for working to finalize this ICANN 60 schedule so early, so that we're not setting up for a repeat of what we experienced this time last year going into Hyderabad, where the things were still changing while we were getting on airplanes. But generally, there is a community-wide block schedule that is starting to take shape, and then we have a block schedule for the GNSO and GNSO-specific events, council events, as well as allocated times for PDP working groups, face-to-face meetings, and IRT working groups, as well as time allocated for SG&C meetings as well. So I don't know if there's someone from staff who would like to maybe walk us through the block schedule as it stands today, It's certainly something that we can circulate, and I think I'm going to pick on Natalie here for a minute. I think that we're getting very close to being able to synthesize our block schedule into the larger draft schedule, which means we could have something available for review as soon as next week or shortly thereafter. So that's the state of affairs right now currently with the block schedule for ICANN 60. I have questions, or if a staff member wants to flesh out that introduction. Chat, just following the chat, everyone's still talking about the previous topic. So. Okay, I guess I'll take that silence to indicate that folks are pleased with how this is taking shape, that there's still some opportunity to weigh in on some of the tweaks. I will note that we've identified that there are some PDPs that have the potential to collide with some cross-community discussion sessions. We've asked the leaders of those PDPs to be thoughtful about that, as well as noting that Friday, almost the entire day, on Friday is open for PDPs to schedule unconflicted blocks of time. However, Friday is the last day of a very long meeting, and given the flight situation getting to the Europe, European and North American regions, a lot of folks may not stick around for Friday, so attendance could take a pretty big hit if a meeting is scheduled for that day. But the schedule is fairly clear on that. we're going to go ahead and probably assume that Cyrus is an old hand. We'll go then to Donna and Rafiq. Donna, go ahead.
Thanks, James. Donna Austin. I was just going to note the same point that you did. So from a planning perspective, and this has certainly been a conversation we've had within the registry stakeholder group, because the AGM and the public forum is on Thursday, and nothing is looking like of any substance is going to be discussed on Friday, the registry stakeholder group is avoiding scheduling anything on the Friday. And from conversations we've had with staff on scheduling, we're trying to avoid that as well, because I don't think it's optimal that we schedule a PDP working group on Friday, even though it would be terrific because it would be unconflicted with anything else. It's going to be useless if nobody's available, and if they were available, they're probably going to be in there anyway. Probably a conversation that we can have during the strategic planning in January, but you know, the seven-day meeting is, in my mind, a little bit of a fail because the AGM and the public forum is put on the Thursday, so it really is a six-day meeting. I think, you know, we are people of tradition, and the AGM and public forum has always signaled the end of a meeting, so I think it's a little bit hard to get past that kind of tradition, and I think after 6 days, we'll all be happy to get on a plane and go out as well. So I think, you know, just to bear that in mind, whether the, you know, there are some conversations about making tweaks to the meeting schedule, and that was part of a discussion that was held with Joran and senior staff in the last few weeks. So there is starting to be a discussion about whether we start to tweak the meeting schedule or whether we start to talk about substantive changes to it. So the Meeting Strategy Working Group, I think, concluded its work in 2014. We've run this process now, I think this is the second year. So there's a discussion about whether it's time to review the, you know, the Meeting Strategy Working Group recommendations, or whether it's, you know, we can look at just making some minor tweaks to the schedule. So, sorry, that was a little bit more than I wanted to go into, but, yeah, it just came to mind. So, sorry, James. Thanks.
Thanks, Donna. No apologies necessary. That was very useful, particularly the bit about perhaps revisiting the format. And I think given your experience on the meeting strategy working group and also in implementing this, I think, faithfully over the last couple of years, I think you're in a great position to note those concerns and propose those tweaks. Next up is Rafiq. Go ahead, Rafiq.
Thanks. This is Rafiq speaking. So just two quick questions. First, about the thought for the working group. Are they going to be over the whole week or just like we are trying to put them in, I think, maybe Friday and Saturday or something like that, like to give them a 3-hour session? And my second question is for the stakeholder group and constituency meeting request. How those requests will be handled and how the any conflicts will be managed or handled. So.
Thank you, Rafiq. We'll defer to Natalie, but I think that there are a couple of days, I think Monday and Thursday and potentially Friday, that are open. So, Natalie, go ahead.
Thank you, James. This is Natalie. Yes, I think to your question about conflicts and how we're handling the STC request, it's a collaboration concerning all secretariats of the NCSG, CSG, and Registrar secretariats, as well as Terry from the NSO support and myself. We're all working together to minimize conflicts and to make sure that all meetings are taken into account. So the individual SGC requests, as well as the joint meetings and then meetings with the board. So the aim is that by working together and not having individual SGC requests filed, that we can actually get a successful schedule first time round. And again, all be aware of the difficulties involved in avoiding clashes.
Thank you, Natalie. That addressed your question. Great. Thanks. Noting in the chat. Thank you, Natalie. Okay. So as Natalie noted in the chat that the all the groups are looking to nail down some of the last open questions on the schedule, including when the PDPs individually will be having their face-to-face meeting. And all of that is targeted to be resolved. She says early next week, but I'm going to be a little more maybe realistic and generous and say by the end of next week or shortly thereafter. But I think the overall message is that the meeting is taking shape much sooner than the previous AGM last year, that we have a much clearer picture of what the schedule will look like, and there is this paradox of the Friday schedule being completely unconflicted and also very lightly attended, which Donna noted might be fodder for a revision to the format itself. So thanks for everyone who contributed to that, and special thanks in particular to staff and to Heather and Donna for their work on this, since I missed the last call. Look for more updates then on the schedule for ICANN 60 and the final meeting coming up in the next few days. The final meeting schedule, sorry, posting in the next few days. Okay, so then that takes us to the end of our formal schedule. We do have a couple of items of AOB, including AOB 9.1, which is an update from the Cross-Community Working Group on Accountability Workstream 2. And for that, I believe we also have another guest presenter, which is Bernard. Bernie on the call?
Bernie is here. Can you hear me?
Can hear you just fine, Bernie. Bernie's going to give us an update on the Workstream 2 revised timeline, and I think, folks, if you recall, we, Council as a chartering organization, reauthorized the charter and budget for Workstream 2 to continue its work beyond the original projected end date. And so Bernie will give us an update on what the new projected timeline and end date is. So with that, go ahead and take it away, Bernie.
Thank you, sir. I'll make this quick. The slide you have on your screen right now is the WorkStream 2 revised timeline. You'll notice the first month on there is May. And basically, the co-chairs have been driving home since that May period this slide, which basically says the first line is about groups that will only be producing one public comment. So that takes them to mid-March to wrap up that public comment. And the second line is about the plan to produce a final report. You will remember that as we distributed information to the various chartering organizations, that our plan is to run public consultations on what is now the 8 separate topics that WorkStream 2 is covering, and ask for any substantive comments to be made during those public comment periods. We will then assemble all the recommendations into a consolidated report, and we will ask the chartering organizations and the public to comment, but to focus on any interdependencies or conflicts that had to be resolved, given the fact that we're running 8 independent groups that may make recommendations into one another's areas. One example of that is the transparency subgroup, which is recommending that the ombuds take on some new responsibilities with respect to DIDP requests. So, again, the co-chairs, who apologize, unfortunately we could not get one of the co-chairs to present this for you. The co-chairs have been steadfast since May, and with the schedule, and there have been no amendments that have been made, and people have been told that if you are not ready to have a document approved for a second reading by the end of that the plenary will consider simply saying there can be no recommendations for that subgroup because we will not be able to fit it in to the process to wrap up by the end of June, which is an objective that is near and dear to our co-chairs, some of whom have been at this for almost 3 years. Next slide, please. I guess I'll give it a try. Ah, I have control. Excellent. Apologies. Thank you. This is a listing of the topics and their progress as presented internally and to the co-chairs as of yesterday. And basically, good faith conduct, you'll remember, is about indemnification of SO or AC participants that undertake to have a board member removed and could be sued. And that is progressing very, very well. There were almost no negative comments from the public comment period. There were some concerns from the ASO above the language. ASO is, as we all know, a slightly different SO. We met with them in at ICANN 59. I believe half the problem was explaining exactly what this was about. The other half was listening to them about how we could amend the language slightly. That language has been amended and is under approval by the subgroup working on this and should be sent to the ASO next week. So our expectation is by the time we hit Abu Dhabi, that one's going to be done and dusted, as you will. Ombudsman is actually progressing a bit more than what we show here. Unfortunately, Ombuds Group seems to be the one that's inheriting requirements from a number of other groups to add functionalities to itself. Additionally, we inherited a requirement that we perform an external evaluation of the Office of the Ombudsman from previous reviews, and so that took a bit of time to get done. That is now done. That has been received, will be part of the final package. It'll be a little tight, but currently we are in the process of writing the final report and expect to meet the deadlines for that. Staff accountability is working through some issues with the objective of completing its work by the deadline, and the draft report is now out for internal comments within that group. SOAC accountability, I believe you've all seen the comments that were made in the are being integrated into an updated report. That work is almost finalized. It is currently expected that it will be presented for a first reading of the final report at the September plenary meeting of the CCWG Accountability Workstream 2 and should easily meet its deadline. Transparency has been a bit jammed up as we're waiting to have a meeting with ICANN Legal that is now scheduled and is supposed to happen within the next 10 days. And given the state of advancement of the initial report, overall it was okay. There were a few key areas that were of concern, especially to members of this SO, and those are being worked on. So we're hoping that that one will resolve that limited number of issues so that we can get that finalized. Jurisdiction, if you haven't been following it, is, shall we say, a tough slog. Amazingly enough, peace broke out on the meeting yesterday, and there was general agreement for one draft recommendation. Several other topic areas that are being considered. So we're hopeful that as a minimum, we will have at least one recommendation to present. But everyone basically agrees there's no way we're going to be able to take on all the issues that have been brought forward. Human rights is completing its review of the public comments and integration of the comments that were made, basically similarly to SOAC accountability, expects to have its final report in for the September plenary, and there are very few changes, there is no expectation this will go through a second public comment, and similarly to good faith will probably be accepted as a final report by the CCWG accountability in Abu Dhabi. Diversity. We have Rafiq here, who's been working very hard on this, and we're pleased to announce that the group has agreed to a draft set of recommendations, and those have been forwarded to the plenary for consideration on the 30th of August. So actually, they're doing fairly well. We've been working with the diversity group, and I believe the set of recommendations are meet the requirements of the various communities that are participating while still being reasonable for everyone to consider and implement. That's my general report. I'll be glad to take any questions if there are any.
Thank you, Bernie. Very grateful for your detailed and comprehensive update. And I think, you know, just looking at the chart, obviously its jurisdiction stands out as the problem child. But as you note, hoping to see some progress on that fairly soon. We have just a couple of minutes remaining in our allocated time and one item of AOB to discuss. So I will go to Keith next. Keith, go ahead. Keith lowered his hand, but he did put a note in the chat regarding a carryover bit of work from Workstream 1. So I think perhaps it was related
to that. The IoT is progressing. We don't report on it because it's sort of a cousin to our work. It was just simpler from a budgeting point of view to stick it under the Workstream 2. But it is an independent effort, and It's progressing slowly. The public comment ended in February, but the items that are being considered can have significant ramifications. So everyone is moving. It's moving slower than people expected, I believe. But there is very deep care being brought to every modification that is being considered. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Bernie. Okay, let's go ahead and conclude this this item of AOB and say thank you to Bernard and to staff for updating that, and thanks to everyone who is participating on Workstream 2. It sounds like the work is progressing and reaching some critical deadlines, so please follow that carefully and make sure that your SOs and ACs, sorry, your SGs and Cs are engaged. I just wanted to raise, we have 3 minutes left, I just wanted to highlight a discussion that's occurring on the list, and staff is reminding me correctly should have been included in our discussion of ICANN 60, which is that the proposed council development session that is targeted for January of 2018 is, those dates are coming the week before the non-contracted intersessional, but are colliding with a new industry event that is gaining some stature called NamesCon, which is occurring, I believe, that same week. Phil and some others have noted potential conflicts. The options for moving things around are not good. The impact to attendance, you know, if you go one direction, you lose the contracted party house, and if you go another direction, you lose the non-contracted party house. So it's just looking very, very rough. And staff is telling me that if anything is going to change or move regarding the development event or the intersessional, it needs to happen, like, really, really quickly because they're starting to line up facilities, et cetera. So my request, and I see Michaeli's hand going up, but we're out of time. My request is, folks, please take a look at that item on the list. Please weigh in whether or not you will be able to attend either of those sessions, and we may actually circulate a doodle poll that just tries to get a head count on who would come if these things were noted or not. Phil is the only one that's noted a conflict. I'll go ahead and put myself down as I'm not sure yet if I'm invited to the council development session, but if so, I would probably be conflicted as well. And I would suggest that other folks please weigh in on that. And that is something that until our next meeting, we need to get that nailed down. So just wanted to make sure that was front and center for a number of folks. Because our window to make some changes to that is closing fairly rapidly. Okay, with that, we have 1 minute left. Michaeli, go ahead.
Thanks, James. Just on this particular topic, at the moment on the list, Phil has said that he has a conflict. There's been a bit of mutterings about other potential conflicts, but we don't actually have any real data. So I would suggest maybe that staff circulate a doodle so that we actually know who has a conflict and when, taking into account the dates and availability of space and staff and everything else. Because at the moment, we don't know that there's a conflict impacting more than one person. If it's only one person, that's very different than if it's 10 people. Thanks.
Thanks, Michaeli. It's a good idea. We will circulate that. We also need to circulate it to the counselors that we know will be joining in the next session by January. Some of those seats are still subject to election, so we don't know everyone to include in that doodle poll, but it's something that we can take away, and we'll work on that fairly quickly. I just want to point out just, you know, look, we're all kind of road warriors here, and I just want to note that Los Angeles and Las Vegas are not. It's not a huge undertaking to get between one and the other. I just want to put that out on the table. It's not like we're talking about, you know, Tokyo and Paris or something like that. These are fairly interconnected cities that are not too far apart. So that it may be an option that we can find some workable solution that squeezes these events together. So. please take a note on that, weigh in on that thread on the list, and we will work with staff to get a doodle poll circulated to everyone that we know might be included in that, including current counselors and potential future counselors. So, okay. So with that, we've reached the end of our agenda. We've reached the end of our AOB. Concluded a couple of important votes, so I would say thank you to everyone for today's call. We are 2 minutes over, so I appreciate your patience as usual. With that, we can, if there are no objections, we can adjourn for today. And I would ask staff to stop the recording, and we can wrap up. So thank you all to counselors and staff and our guest presenters for today's call. We're adjourned.